Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to recap the first padded practice, which took place yesterday. They're going to be out on the practice field again in a little bit. We'll preview that and a number of players.
Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Only uppers yesterday. Today, full pads, which means a lot of contact.
A little bit more physical, correct?
There we go.
There you go.
All right.
First full padded practice. There was padding yesterday. It did classify as the first padded practice, but Paul demonstrated for those of you watching in real life what exactly they're going to have to deal with and what I'm going to have to deal with for the next 60 minutes, as you can only imagine. In addition, a number of players at Ben McAdoo did address the media as well. I want to start, though, Paul, with probably the biggest storyline that emerged yesterday is the fact that the Giants signed a new kicker, and there's now competition at that position. And John and I did briefly talk about it yesterday, but now we have since heard from Mike Nugent. And what Mike Nugent explained was that he didn't say that the Giants have had conversations with him over the last few months and that this was building up. He mentioned that they had reached out to him very recently because now they felt this was the timing that they wanted to bring in some competition.
Okay, so let's construct the timeline for you. The Giants told Aldrick Rosas several months ago that they expected to bring in a veteran at some point during training camp so that he would have some competition. So Rosas was well aware of this possibility way back when. Number two, the Giants did not talk to Mike Nugent until only a few days ago because this is the time that they decided was going to be the proper moment for the competition to begin. They reached out to Nugent. Nugent said that he had been monitoring the Giants situation for quite a long time, realizing that they only had one kicker in camp and that he was a rookie and that they probably would be interested in bringing in a veteran. So he kept it in the back of his mind and continued to work out during the offseason because, as he said, I'm not done. People need to understand. I plan on kicking this year. This would be his 14th year in the NFL, okay? And he said all along that I'm going to kick, and people need to know that. So it's good for me to be in a training camp because otherwise, out of sight, out of mind, people think that you're going to retire and that you don't want to kick. So he was thrilled to get the call from the Giants because this gives him an opportunity to showcase himself, if not for the Giants. And by the way, he said he believes he can win the job from Rosas. I think that's quite a long task.
Well, but he should believe that. I mean,
he
listen, that's the whole point. You come into camp. You
he has to believe
job.
It. He has to believe it. I do think, though, that everything that I've seen from Rosas, unless he falls off a cliff, I think his performance so far to this point would warrant the roster spot. But we will see. Nugent is very much aware of the fact that now that he's in camp, it does wave a spotlight to every other team in the league, though, that, hey, I'm here, I'm ready, I'm willing to compete, I'm trying to kick this year, and at least he knows now that if Rosas should continue to hold on to the job, Nugent has sent the flare off to the rest of the teams in the league that he's ready to be called upon. So that's where we stand right now.
Well, every team watches film from just about every single preseason
game.
So obviously he gives himself an opportunity if he doesn't make the Giants roster. But we've seen this before. You go back to when Josh Brown was here. We've seen competitions between young guys as well as polished veterans. And the preseason games, Paul, is going to be what separates the men from the boys. I mean, we can analyze practice all we want. We could talk about they have the right mindset, game situations. And even Ben McAdoo indicated that. There's no timeline for them to make a decision, but they're all waiting. This coaching staff, Tom Quinn included, the special teams coordinator, they're waiting to see what happens in games.
And they have to, because that's the ultimate test. And quite honestly, again, I think to put this in its proper perspective, I think Rosas is going to have to do more to lose the job than Nugent is going to be able to do to beat him. I mean, if Rosas is perfect, I mean, as he was yesterday, 4-for-4 at practice, if he continues to do extremely well in practice, and then he hits every single kick during the preseason, I don't see him getting beaten out.
Because of the longevity that he's been with the team and they've been working with
he's
him.
Shown
I think
for
that gives
months.
Him an edge. There's no doubt that gives him an edge, but I still go by, I think it really depends on the results of the games. But if Rosas comes through in the games, he's not going to give the Giants a reason
that's
for
the
them
point.
To part ways with him.
He's going to have to slip up. He's going to have to open the door, I believe, for Nugent to be able to squeeze through.
The other thing that I wanted to bring up, because when you think of Mike Nugent, he started his career with the Jets, so people are thinking, oh, well, maybe he has familiarity with the Meadowlands, and he does, but keep in mind, Mike Nugent never kicked as a member of the Jets in the new stadium. He was with the Jets at the old Giants Stadium.
He kicked it with Cincinnati.
Correct. He has been here as a road opponent, but he has not been right in terms of the new stadium, but let's face it, the Meadowlands wins are the Meadowlands wins.
Not as difficult or as strong, as they were in the old building, but they're
still present. Correct.
They are still here. As you know, I check them out before every game.
Yes, well, there's no doubt about that. You have all of your mechanisms and technological things that you use in your pregame prep. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We're going to open up the phone lines. Just want to get to a few other things that came out of the media sessions yesterday, Paul. Rhett Ellison spoke, and this was the first time that he really opened up in depth about his versatility and how may he be utilized throughout the course of the offense. Said that, listen, he's open to whatever the coaching staff wants him to do, but he was pressed upon on multiple occasions, can you do inline blocking? Can you do fullback blocking? And he says he has no problem in terms of being thrown into either one of those positions because, as he mentioned, in college he's been used as a fullback. In Minnesota he was used as a fullback to block for Adrian Peterson. But he did mention, and I like the fact that he provided some insight, there is a distinct difference between being utilized as an inline blocker as a tight end versus you coming out from the backfield.
There sure is, because when you're an inline blocker, the defensive player who's on the line of scrimmage opposite you has no chance to gain momentum. And when you're in the backfield, he's got an ability to get up ahead of steam before he cracks into you.
That's going
to
be some collision. Yeah.
You know, and thank goodness, though, as you said, Ellison has done all of the different things that the Giants would like to use him for as an H-back, as an inline guy, as a fullback. He's done it all with the Vikings and successfully, again, blocked for Adrian Peterson during his 2,000-yard season. So there is no question about this man's ability. And I will tell you, an NFL scout told me recently, and it's something I've been preaching on this show for quite a while, Rhett Ellison is the most valuable, most underrated addition to this Giants roster. I get that Brandon Marshall's a star. I get that G.J. Fluker's a former first-round pick trying to resuscitate his career. I understand all of that, okay? I get that Evan Ingram's a number one pick. But Rhett Ellison, if healthy, and if he plays 16 games for this team, he will do so much in many different aspects of the offense to allow them to open up the playbook and to make defenses respect other parts of the game besides, let's just throw them out wide and chuck the ball downfield.
I agree with you. I think that it's easy to get caught up in names and be enamored by big-name free agents, but usually when you see the most improvement out of a team, Paul, it comes from those subtle additions. And Rhett Ellison is a subtle addition by name. He's not a household name. Unless you were following the Vikings, you didn't really know much about maybe what he brings to the table. But if you look at where the Giants are trying to improve the most from 2016 to 2017, and we've talked about getting that running game going, having consistency, blocking from the tight ends is that extra layer that could help the running game. So therefore, it could equate to, when it's all said and done, if this season truly turns into be a successful campaign in terms of the ground game, I think we can look back and argue that the MVP of this team could very well be Rhett Ellison.
I'm going to go back to the Giants' last two Super Bowl teams, and I'm going to tell you there was a similar player who flew under the radar and just was so overlooked by everybody except for the people who really understood football. In 2007, they signed Kavika Mitchell, okay, who was coming off the scrap heap, got a one-year minimum. Nobody thought much of him at all. He comes in, he becomes a starting weak side linebacker for the Giants and made big play after big play after big play, especially down the stretch for a team that won the Super Bowl. And I've talked to Antonio Pierce about this 100 times, and he could not agree with me more. Kavika Mitchell, the most underrated player on that team. And then in the 2011 season, if you remember, during training camp, the Giants had some injuries, and all of a sudden they called back Deion Grant off the scrap
heap. That's another good one.
Because he had left via free agency. He was still out there keeping in shape, and the Giants got banged up. And it was like, okay, you know what? Let's call Deion. He knows the system. When they called him back, they weren't 100% sure what they were going to get, except they knew he was a leader, he was mature, and he understood the playbook. But they didn't know he was going to be such a big part of that defense. Turned out, They went to the three safety package with Perry Fuel. He was on the field for most of the plays, and he solidified the back end of that defense to the point that they went and won a Super Bowl. And believe me, that Deion Grant signing, it was nice to see him back. We all knew who he was because he was here before. But that went under the radar because it happened during training camp. He was an afterthought.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put Red Ellison in that category, even though he was signed earlier in the year and for bigger money. I understand that. But in terms of the hype machine, he was overlooked.
I will throw one other player in there, Paul. I think Chase Blackburn belongs in this conversation, too. I mean, he's another guy.
In-season injury replacement.
True.
But agreed.
But meaning
agreed.
Underrated, you overlook, all right,
no,
hey,
question.
No big deal, and then look at the role he plays.
I bet you they don't win that Super Bowl without him.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had a huge interception, too, in that game the last time I checked. So
ask Gronk.
Yeah. Now, Gronk was hurt. I understand that. But
no
still,
excuses.
It was a hell of a play.
No excuses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to at least note
that. He was
like
50 yards downfield. Yeah. Chase was all over it. Underthrown ball by the one and only Tom Brady, by the way. What a shame. Anything else?
No. Well, I just think that it's important to bring up the fact that the Giants have had a strong track record based on the names that we've thrown out in some of these, you know, underrated players that have actually given them some good return on that investment. One other thing I want to throw out, and then we'll open up the phone lines. Paul Perkins did speak to the media, and I thought his best response, Paul, was when he talked about how he's trying to expand his role, how the coaching staff is trying to expand his role this season. And this is not a huge element, but he mentioned that they're looking at him to become perhaps more of a guy that could catch the ball on third downs and be more of a receiving threat. We saw flashes of that. Now, granted, he wasn't every down player last year, but everybody trying to determine, is Paul Perkins going to be a workhorse? Is he only going to be a first and a second down back? You know, I think they're going to toy with him a little bit this season, and I wouldn't rule out that Shane Vereen's going to be the only guy on the field on third down situations.
I think you're right. When we heard him mention third down yesterday, my ears kind of perked up a little bit, and I said, well, wait a minute now. But, you know, this could be because right now they're pushing Paul. And they want to find out what his limitations are. We've talked about this many times on the show during the preseason and training camp. You want to expand a player's playbook to see if he can do it. And many times it's to see, well, if he can't do it, we know not to use that during the regular
season.
And
throw that out.
Exactly.
And use somebody else.
It's a seek and search mission to figure out what the player is capable of. I also believe that, quite frankly, Shane Vereen coming off a horrible year of injuries, you know, twice with that torn pec muscle, biceps muscle, I'm sorry. He's getting older. I mean, would it be such a bad idea if maybe Paul took some of those third downs away from Shane Vereen just to keep him on the field for 16 games?
Well, and then for the future, then he could be that reliable option. And then as you work in Wayne Gallman, that could be perhaps a 1-2 punch moving forward.
Absolutely.
So, you're right. Well, I think what you brought up, and I didn't mean to cut you off, Paul, is also planning and looking ahead. Not just preparing for 2017, but saying, hey, if we get Perkins more reps as a receiver, if we move on from Vereen down the road, or he doesn't hold up from a durability standpoint, we're at least still in good position.
Well, you've got to remember something. If Shane Vereen goes down this year like he did last year, they don't want to be in a similar boat where they got to throw out gallons and gallons of that playbook out of the pool.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw what it did to this offense when he went out. It was bad. And they need to know that there is a backup third down back option available should Vereen get nicked up again. And, you know, I understand that drone was brought in from San Francisco.
He's on
but
PUP now.
He's on PUP, and there's no guarantee he makes the team. So maybe Paul Perkins winds up, if Vereen gets hurt, becoming more of the third down guy, and then Gallman has to maybe take more of Perkins' first and second down responsibilities. They need to be ready for this.
Shane Vereen's loss, it goes without saying, was a significant loss because of his pass protection on third down,
yes,
his ability to catch the football. So it's not just guys who can catch the football, it's also preparing them in terms of pass protection. And I'm glad you brought up Sean Drone, because I know we've received some questions on Twitter, and we'll get to more throughout the show about, you know, what's the chances of a guy like that making the team with him starting off on PUP. And you know who comes to mind, Paul? And I'm not saying that this is an ideal comparison, but Trindon Holliday. Remember that year they brought him in via free agency? Now, he's more of a special teams guy, but also as a running back. And
Broncos.
I was high on him, and maybe it's just because he's small in stature like me, so I will admit that. But
they
what
stick
happened,
together, folks.
Correct.
You know?
We got it. We have a select group. What happened was he suffered a hamstring injury,
Yeah. Remember?
And he was limited for the remainder of camp, and he ultimately didn't make the team. So that hurts you. It hurts you if you, regardless of what your track record is, it hurts if you can't get on the field, then you can at least try to stave off the rest of the competition.
Agreed.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. Want to hear from you. Everything up for debate, up for discussion in terms of training camp, some of the things we learned from the pressers. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. He gets us started on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Len?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right, Len. What do you got for us?
Good. Hey, Paul, good to talk to you yesterday for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, you know, I wish you'd come up today, Len, with the full pads on, but at least you got to see some contact.
I know, you know, I messed up. My real plan was to come up on Thursday. A couple of things didn't break right. I figured, well, okay, I'm gonna do the one-day shot up and back on Tuesday. But, you know, great entertainment. I mean, you know, if I lived closer, I'd probably go every day, Paul.
I know the feeling.
Kind of a little bit of a hole for me from down here, but you know, once a year, I'll get to camp, and I saw Jeff yesterday too, right at the end of his autograph session. So I was glad to be able to shake Jeff Fiegel's hand.
Very nice.
It's really nice. It's a good show.
But did you shake his foot? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's all other thing. Yeah.
You know, Lance, just a comment on something you said a couple of minutes ago, and brought back great memories. Let me respond to what you said this way: when Gronkowski got to the sideline after that interception, I can almost guarantee you, he said to a coach, "Who was that guy?"
I'm sure he did.
Chase Blackburn, yeah. 50 yards down the field. One of the great plays in Giants history. I don't care if the ball was underthrown or not. Gronkowski looked around and said, what the heck was he doing down the field? Great play by Chase.
Yep, absolutely.
Just a great play. Hey, listen, a couple of observations from yesterday, and I know you really didn't need my input to know this because we've been talking about it all offseason, but, you know, when you see Eli running some plays, five or six plays in a row, and then Geno, four or five plays, and then Johnson gets in there for four or five plays. And maybe it was because Eli had a really terrific day yesterday. God, he was sharp.
Well, he knew you were going to be there, so that's why.
You gotta say to yourself, please stay healthy, Eli. I mean, the drop off is the guy is in such control. You can just see it even in a practice.
Len, before you go anywhere. As much as you want to praise Eli, and I get it because we all praise this guy, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Again, I'm standing firm on that no matter what anybody says. Yeah. But did you get a chance to watch Davis Webb?
I saw him when he was playing catch before they really got into it, and then I saw him working with Brett Jones on snaps. I didn't see him unless he did it really late. I left about 10 minutes early, about 1:50 when I got out of there, maybe 1:45. 1245, I'm sorry, 1245. So maybe I didn't see him at the end, but I didn't really see him take those snaps, Paul. So
he did not do 7-on-7s or 11-on-11s yesterday. He has done them in previous practices, but what I was more talking about is earlier in the practice yesterday, before they went into the team drills, they did a lot of throwing with each of the quarterbacks, where they just had the quarterbacks throwing to the receivers who were lined up against air. And you should have seen a lot of Webb there. And if you did not like the way he throws the ball, then I think your eyes must have been closed, because Davis Webb is a fine-looking young prospect.
Yeah, I didn't mean to sound negative about Webb. I really didn't catch him. You know, they move from, as you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Other fans might appreciate this if they're going to go to practice in the next week or so. They do move from field to field.
Yes. Yes.
And you can be in one set of stands. By the way, very comfortable, very well done. I mean, it's a great show by the Giants.
Gotta wear your Nikes, Len, so you can move from field to field with them.
Yeah. So you got to be ready to move. Is what I'm saying. And I always have my binoculars with me. If anybody's going, bring binoculars with you. It helps tremendously. Because sometimes you look and the sight lines aren't the greatest because you're far away and so forth. But basically, it's a pretty good show. Yeah, no, I'm okay with Webb. I didn't mean to sound negative with him. And your comment about Ellison, just a few plays yesterday, Paul. He really is going to make a difference. It's been a long time since we've had somebody like Red Ellison. let's label him a tight end, but he's able to do some other things. Eli found him a couple of times yesterday on some pass patterns. I know we spent a lot of money on him, but I think at the end of the year we're gonna be praising Red Ellison.
Yeah.
The guy looks good. A couple of other real quick observations.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, I don't follow the Bears at all. I don't follow the Dolphins. I don't follow the Jets at all. So you know where I'm going with this, with Brandon Marshall. But you know, we talked about his size. Geez, he's big. Holy cow. Brandon Marshall is a big man. That's going to be fun to watch. That's going to be fun to watch. You know, it was nice to see them bump into each other a little bit. Gallman, a little upright, I know, but, you know, he showed good hands coming out of the backfield, caught a couple of passes. I think he looked pretty good. I think maybe not week one, but I think by the end of the season, we're going to be glad we made that pick.
I can see them working him into the mix. Remember, Paul Perkins slowly, as the season went along, became much more involved. So I think that's
yeah.
a fair statement to say that he'll progress slowly. But, you know, I think Perkins and Vereen are going to be the first two guys up, and I'd be very surprised if Gallman makes an immediate impact that quickly.
Yeah. The young kid from James Madison, geez, he's quick to the hole. Abdullah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, man, he's a danger to himself in the pass game. That doesn't – he's going to have a tough time making the roster.
Well, it's going to be tough because of the number of personnel, too.
He hits the hole quick.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. And don't ever disrespect FCS guys, by the way, because, you know, I'm a big guy on 1AA football. And I think that these guys a lot of times get overlooked, and there's a lot of talent there. But again, in some cases, it's more developmental talent than ready-to-go talent.
And let me just ask Paul a real quick question.
You guys were high on a safety from St. Francis of Pennsylvania during the football season and during all the draft talk and so forth. Whatever happened to the kid? Did he get drafted, Paul?
Lorenzo Jerome from the St. Francis Red Flash signed as an undrafted free agent with the San Francisco 49ers. He had a sensational minicamp. He's having a terrific summer camp. From all indications that I've heard, he's going to make their 53.
Wow, that's terrific. St. Francis of Pennsylvania, Maurice Stokes territory.
You're correct.
All right, Len.
Hey guys, great talking to you.
Got it.
Thanks
appreciate
for taking
the phone
my call.
You got it. All right, let's hear from Nick in Texas. Nick, what's happening?
Hello? Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, Nick. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Okay, I got a couple things. I have a bold prediction. I think Mykel Thompson will probably be the fourth cornerback. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Well, he's been moving around so far during camp, Paul.
Playing more outside corner than any other position because they pretty much decided now that safety is not his best spot. He'd be much better off over on the corner spot. He's had a lot of injuries, and quite honestly, he's more wiry than your typical safety would be. You know, safety's got to be a little bit more physical and hit guys now because you have a lot of tight ends who are mixing it up with safeties and even some of these bigger receivers. So he's been playing outside trying to win a backup job at corner. Now, of course, because he originally was a safety, we've talked about it, and I've really talked about it, maybe he's the swing guy. You know, because
they need guys that can play both. Remember, Bennett Jackson, you know, he was another guy that moved back and forth.
Leon Hall, Bennett Jackson, sure.
Leon Hall, so they had that.
Ultimately, he's still going to have to prove he's at least good enough at one of those positions to earn a roster spot. And it is an uphill battle for him. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, but you got to watch him during camp in the preseason games, and let's see if he earns it.
Yeah, he did play corner at Texas, so, I mean, that bodes well for him. But, you know, on top of that, he's also got to prove that he can stay durable. Let's face it.
No question.
You know, he's been in these positions before, and then, unfortunately, the injury bug bites him. That's the big question for him.
Yeah, and I think another one, I think Evan Engram will probably be rookie of the year because I think Eli Manning's going to choose him to be catching the ball more often. Because he hasn't had a tight end like that in a very long time.
I saw a stat the other day that the average rookie first-round pick numbers since the 2000 season, 29 catches for like 310 yards.
I think everybody's at least got to maybe take a step back in terms of their expectations based on those numbers, and I've seen them too. I think, listen, Engram, with the talent he has around him, he certainly is capable of making a big impact. But, you know, to go into the season thinking that he's going to put up these monstrous numbers, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, remember, Tyler Eifert was a first-round pick. And Eifert, I think, is a really good tight end.
Yeah.
And he's been a great red zone target for the Bengals. And, you know, his numbers were also very modest when he was a rookie.
The last rookie tight end to make the Pro Bowl was Jeremy Shockey in 2002.
Which, of course, was a Giant.
And that's in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's not just Giants now. That's NFL. So you're asking for a lot.
Well, I'm hoping for a lot. But I'm hoping that he actually opens up, you know, a lot more plays, you know, towards his way, because, you know, he hasn't had anything, you know, open in the middle like that. And I think that's going to affect Sterling Shepard a lot, because he's going to be coming out of the slot, right?
Well, that's where he played the majority of last season.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about Engram, though. Like, he's going to
be... Oh, you're talking about Engram. I thought you were talking about Shepard. Well, I think they're gonna move Engram around. I mean, we've seen it in practice. He's moved around in a variety of spots. I don't think he's solely just a slot guy.
Agreed.
I think they're gonna try to maximize his potential by moving him around. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now going back to the Super Bowl, I've actually seen Manningham's catch, and I think that catch was probably the best one. I know the helmet catch was amazing, but that little hole that Eli Manning had to hit Manningham was just bonkers.
I'm gonna make you revise your statement, okay? The Eli throw was the best throw on the Manningham catch, because that ball had to be on the tip of a pin to drop it in there to make that play work. But the best catch, that's David Tyree. You're not going to move me off of that.
Oh, yeah, the catch is great. I guess Eli Manning had the best throw, because that thing was, like, tight, and he made it in there perfect.
He threaded
even
the needle.
If you could see the sideline, like, they were just kind of, like, freaking out that he actually made that catch.
Well, and you know what? And this is, again, is part of my argument for Eli for the Hall of Fame. When you talk about that play in that spot with everything on the line, there may be only four people on the face of the earth who could have made that throw and made it work. And Eli's one of them.
That's what
makes him special.
He put it in a position where only Manningham could make the catch and put it out of harm's way. So, I mean, that's what really was impressive about the throw. And, Nick, appreciate the phone call. Thanks
so
much,
Wayne. By the way, Rodgers is one of them.
Yes.
He could do it, too.
Yes, Aaron Rodgers has made a number of big throws. I remember, actually, speaking of Rodgers, in the Super Bowl victory against the Steelers, it wasn't a magnificent throw. I just look at it as a huge catch. It was the one he threw over the middle. I think it was to Greg Jennings, and it was a key first down that helped them ultimately get into scoring position. So every one of those quarterbacks who is a polished veteran has that one identifiable play or throw in all of their Super Bowl victories. I think that's a pretty much common theme.
Yeah.
Let's head back to the phone lines here. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number as we are recapping what happened in practice yesterday, talking about the pressers and getting into any other subject matters you want to tackle. Ken is in New Jersey. Ken, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. How are we doing today?
Doing well, Ken. What do you got for us?
P-Dot, I think I met you on Saturday. Well, I know I met you, but you might not remember me.
I met you. That's some lie.
I'm sorry. I'm focused on practice. I don't remember everything else that's not on the field, but I hope it was a nice meeting.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Beckham just scored a 40-yard touchdown. I was on the catwalk. I was a little Italian kid. He said, P-Dot, and he turned around and said hi to me.
Oh, cool. Well, hello again.
Wait, Ken, did you shake his hand?
No, there was a fence and a bleacher in front of me.
That's disappointing.
Paul.
That's disappointing, Ken, because I was going to ask you if you've washed your hands since Saturday as a result of that. So I'm sorry
to
hear that
you
didn't have an opportunity, Ken. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. If I shook Paul DiTino's hand, I wouldn't wash my hand for a week.
A missed opportunity on your part, Ken. I really hope you're in close proximity.
Who's going to take more abuse today,
Ken?
Me or the players?
Yes. Well, you know. We like to spread the wealth.
Well, I'm glad
program.
You made it out, and do say hello next time you're out here.
Yeah, we'll do. I only live in Hamilton. I can make it to Giant Stadium in 58 minutes.
Nice.
Paul's a little bit sooner than that, but that's all right.
Closer than Lance.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
That's the timeline if we were to put all three of you together. But what do you got, Ken?
I wanted to know what running backs you guys think would make the team and who would be the power back out of those guys, because I like how Darkwa hits the hole still. Even though he hasn't been healthy, I always like the way he runs.
You know, I don't see the Giants being able to keep all the backs they have here right now, and Drone being on the PUP puts him at a mega disadvantage. I think if these guys stay healthy, you're looking at Perkins and Goleman and Vereen. And you know, beyond that, I mean, I think Dark was going to be the next guy.
Remember, he plays special teams.
Yes.
That gives him an edge.
I personally would not gamble on Drone coming off PUP because I have no idea what his status is other than he's off to the side right now. I can't even put him in the conversation right now because he's not on the field. And Abdullah, he's just not ready for this right now, in my opinion. So that's the way I go.
Yeah, I would go the same way. I would do Perkins, Goleman. I would have Vereen as a third down back for long distance stuff, and Darkwa for the power back.
Now I will say this: if Goleman over the course of the preseason or even during the early regular season proves that he can be a touchdown goblin like he was at Clemson. You know, where he ran for 19 touchdowns last year, okay? If he proves that he can do that short yardage stuff at this level, you know, they may wean him into that spot. And Darkwa, who I think right now is the best suited for it, he may not be able to hold on to it very long. Because if Goleman shows that he can sniff that end zone out, trust me, they're going to want to get that young kid the ball.
Now, it's interesting you brought up Darkwa because, remember, a lot of people were wondering, well, why didn't Darkwa see as much time last season when he had flashed the previous year? But remember, Darkwa was banged up a little bit. That's number one that people forget about.
Leg fracture.
So that's why they limited the amount of opportunities they were going to throw out for running game opportunities, and mainly he was a key special teams contributor. They didn't want to wear him down. So if he's fully healthy, which he is right now, I think that at least helps him get back in the mix for that type of role.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate
you got it, Ken.
And,
great.
I gave my my bold prediction yesterday, Paul. You'll like it. The Giants are going to win the time of possession week one in Dallas. Thanks a lot, guys, for taking my call.
All right, Ken. You
no
got
problem.
It. Yep, we put it down on the list. It's well documented.
Cool.
Ken in New Jersey weighing in terms of the time of possession battle in week one. We'll certainly digest a lot of that as we get closer to the first matchup of the season. Let's head back to the lines. Marco is in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Hello, Marco. What do you got for us?
I kind of have a couple questions. I'm kind of worried about what would happen if Rhett Ellison was to go down, because I kind of see him as like last year's Will Johnson. And I remember you guys talking about how a big negative it was that Will Johnson went down and how it affected our running game and our offense. Do we have, like, a plan B if Ellison was to go down?
I think there are a couple of ways they could go should this happen. And, please, let's not be doomsayers about this. But
yeah, I hate saying
it's not
like that,
it's just, you know, I don't even want to talk about this. But, you know, they've got Smith and Huseman at running back right now as undrafted rookie free agents trying out at that position. So maybe they decide that, if Ellison goes down, we do, in fact, keep a fullback. So maybe one of those guys gets a spot on the roster. Or maybe Matt Lacoste.
That's the guy I would point to.
Becomes more of the blocking tight end.
He's now the most capable of doing that.
He is.
Yeah.
Although not nearly as accomplished.
No, but I'm saying that he fits the profile of Ellison best compared to anyone else
really
on the
does.
Roster.
He really does. Or they go outside and look at the waiver wire and find a real good blocking tight end that happens to find himself cutting out of a job sometime within the next month.
See, the difference between this year's roster, just piggybacking off of what Paul just said, compared to last year, when Will Johnson went down, it would be hard to make the argument that there was another close resemblance to Will Johnson on the roster.
Nothing.
That's the problem.
Nothing.
This year, while there is differences between Ellison and Matt Lacoste, and remember, Lacoste was hurt last year. So Lacoste stays healthy, which is also a factor that you have to take into consideration. He has been a fullback. He has been an H-back. He's been a tight end, also going back to college like Rhett Ellison. So you feel as if he's got a similar profile to Ellison, that if Matt Lacoste does make the roster, maybe they'll experiment and toy with that as opposed to starting to move guys into positions where they really don't have much experience. That's the big difference between this year's group of players versus last year's group of players with Will Johnson.
Okay. My other question is kind of like a what-if kind of question. now that we've seen Eli and McAdoo's West Coast style offense, do you think Eli would have been a better quarterback if he would have been in this type of system when he first came out of college? And, you know,
No way. This is a quarterback who has adapted to a whole nother system for a variety of reasons, specifically the fact that they didn't have much of a running game or a lot of success with the offensive line in recent years, to where they needed to adapt. You know what they tell you? Necessity sometimes is the form of invention. And Eli, big heads off, hats off to him. And again, another feather in his cap for the Hall of Fame at how he has totally changed his game around. Basically, like a fastball pitcher had to learn how to be a finesse pitcher and throw a lot of junk and a lot of stuff instead of relying on heat. Eli Manning has totally changed his game and still become a very effective winner in this league.
Okay. All right, that's all I really have for you guys. All right, Marco. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. When you look at Eli's numbers under McAdoo versus under Kevin Gilbride, I mean, he set career highs in various parts of his career. So I don't think it's cut and dry where you say, oh, well, his numbers skyrocketed in McAdoo's system. I mean, remember, he had nearly 5,000 passing yards in 2011 when Gilbride was the offensive coordinator. So you can't just dismiss that. I think the results are mixed, and I also think that what the West Coast system calls for in terms of some of those shorter dump-off passes, you figure that's going to increase your completion percentage, Paul, because mm-hmm. you're not necessarily going for the home run as much as they were looking for at times under Gilbride.
Sure, no doubt. And then conversely, if you're going to be throwing a lot more short stuff and taking a lot less chances down the field for the big plays, you figure your touchdown catch numbers may go down a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, all of that to me is really goes hand in hand with the system.
That's why, again, stats, analytics, stay away from it, folks. I mean, they're good to give you something, but they're not the whole meal. You know, you got to make sure you got the potatoes and the vegetables and the salad and everything else.
The buffet.
Don't just eat the steak. Okay, you got to have it all. Put it all in perspective when you make analyses and judgments.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Chris in Cranford. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, guys, really enjoy your show. I'm
appreciate
a giant
that.
Season ticket holder.
Thanks for tuning in.
Cool.
Yeah, grew up in Kearney, New Jersey, home of Alex Webster.
Yes,
my dad
Big Red.
Great, great friends.
Big
used to
Red.
Go to Monmouth College a lot.
Great guy, Alex, by the way. Miss him terribly. Very, very, very nice man.
Oh, Alex was the best.
Terrific.
He was the best. Used to go to the stadium pub that he owned in Seagirt when I was a kid. So I go way back with the team.
You know,
listen, I want to touch on
before you do that. Many people don't even know he was one of the greatest NFL success stories to come out of the CFL.
That's correct. That's and North Carolina State University.
There you go.
Listen, I want to touch on McAdoo's play calling, and I don't want to do it as you know so many fans his play calling stinks and everything. I want to touch on it more from the standpoint of formation, down, distance, where you are on the field, and utilizing Odell more. Now, I know it sounds crazy. But I sit in MetLife Stadium, and all the guys around me, and we're like, where's Odell? Where is he? We got to target him more. The guy is a phenomenal football player, perhaps one of the best in the league, and forget about his shenanigans off the field and all that stuff. When the guy touches the ball, only good things happen, only good things. And, you know, we don't see a lot of the short screens like Roethlisberger runs to Antonio Holmes and stuff like that. He has to touch the ball. Odell has to touch the ball more. And, you know, we look at McAdoo and his head is buried in that gigantic menu that he has. And it's just, I don't know. I sit there and I shake my head sometimes because now that he has even more weapons to play with this year, I don't know if he's even going to get targeted.
All right, hold on a second now. Oh. Before you go any further, I just showed Lance the stats for targets last season. And Odell Beckham was targeted 180 times, an average of 10.6 per game. The 180 was number one in the NFL. Okay, and the 10.6, second to Mike Evans of the Bucs, who averaged 10.7 targets per mm-hmm. game. How many more throws do you want to give him, especially if you've got Vereen, Engram, Shepard, Marshall in your offense.
No,
and you want to run the ball with Perkins some, right?
No,
I understand.
But sometimes in the, you know, statistics don't lie. Numbers don't lie. I get that. But then why, when I'm sitting there in MetLife Stadium, is it sometimes it just is like he might go through three plays, four plays, and they punt, and he hasn't even touched the ball. What I'm saying to you is that in a series of downs and distances, he's got to touch the ball, like, you know, when it's first down. He's first, second, third. He's got to touch the ball somewhere in there. I don't know. Statistics can lie. They don't tell the whole picture.
Well, but it also depends on the coverage, too. I mean, Eli can't go into a drive and say, I have to get the ball to Odell on first down if there's other opportunities across the field, in fairness, though. I mean, you can't dismiss
Correct.
That. So I never liked the idea of, well, you know, Odell is so dynamic that we have to make sure we feed him the ball. And the other thing to take into consideration, I mean, if you look across the NFL, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm just bringing up the receiving target list. I mean, is Julio Jones – Julio Jones is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. If you go back and you watch games, do you think truly that Atlanta – doesn't go through maybe three or four consecutive plays, Chris, where he's not getting fed the ball? I mean, they got two dynamic running backs on that team. They have some other wide receivers. I mean, that happens for any great wide receiver. There's times Amari Cooper. He may go three or four plays, and Derek Carr doesn't feed him the football. It happens.
Right. But we can't go through situations like we had last year in Green Bay when we came, in the playoff game, when we came out of the half, and I think there was a turnover. There was a turnover right after the half. And we got the ball back, and it's third and one, and we go empty backfield, and Bobby Rainey gets the freaking ball. That can't happen. That can't happen. Those kinds of situations, those are giveaway plays. You can't tell me that the offensive guru McAdoo thought that Bobby Rainey was going to get a first down in that play.
All right, the only thing I'm going to say is that the Giants have tried to enhance their weaponry this year, adding a Brandon Marshall specifically, adding an Evan Engram, perhaps adding Gallman, and then they believe there'll be an improvement along the offensive line. Now, those things combined mean that you should be able to open up the playbook more than what you had last year. Your suggestion about feeding Beckham more, to me, is closing the playbook because now you're pumping more balls to that one guy. I don't see it. I'm sorry, and I appreciate what you're saying because you love Beckham and you know he makes plays, but I think if the Giants are going to win the Super Bowl this year, it's going to be because Beckham, well, among other things, he's not going to average 10.6 targets a game. I'd be happy if he's only averaging 9 targets a game, quite frankly, if one of those other balls every game goes to Brandon Marshall and it turns out to be a big play or a touchdown, maybe even to Sterling Shepard. I mean,
no,
seriously.
I respect your opinion and you know, listen, there's all different ways to skin a cat. There's all different ways to win a game. And, you know, McAdoo's got a tremendous amount of weapons at his disposal this year. That was really the gist of my call. I'm just saying that Odell needs to get the ball, and I appreciate the statistics and stuff like that. And as we move forward, and, you know, I hope to see you out at the game, guys, and I hope to see you at the NFC Championship game this year. You know, and shake hands with you because you guys do a great job.
Thank you.
Good, and we appreciate the phone call, Chris. Thanks so much for weighing in. I'm just carefully looking over the numbers just to put things in perspective here. Odell Beckham, 169 targets last season, 4 behind Mike Evans. Targets percentage
the caught. The chart I just saw had 180, so maybe.
Well, I don't know, whether or not why the numbers are fluctuating. Well, go back to your list. You're sure you were looking at the – I'm not questioning your numbers. I don't know if you lost it. But anyway,
call it back.
This is the chart that I'm looking at. So he had 169 targets. He then had 60% of the targets were caught. And then 39% of those targets led to a first down. Just to look at those numbers. Now, when you look at the amount of targets caught, where that would put him up there among some of the top wide receivers. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald had a remarkable 71% in terms of targets caught. So, you know, Beckham is probably in the top 20 in that category as opposed to high on the list. So, you know, that to me is something that I think is a number you want to see go up. Percentage of targets caught as opposed to necessarily more targets.
Sure.
The execution, the efficiency, that's a number, I think, to Chris's point, that I would be focused more on.
I agree, and I'm not sure why the disparity in the numbers on both of these charts, but here's one thing I will say, and I do think there is something to be said for this. You look at Julio Jones, who only averaged 9.2 targets.
Well, and that's why I brought him
up. Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
They didn't win it, but went to the Super Bowl. Jordy Nelson, Packers offense, incredibly dangerous. And yet, for the Packers, he was their most targeted guy at 155 for the season, or 9.1 per game. I mean, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to get into a situation where, you know, Beckham's targeted 17 times and then everybody else is targeted two or three times. You're not taking full advantage of all your personnel.
Let me just say something. Very simply put, and I want to make this very clear, it's not a knock on anybody, but if the Giants need Odell to get 18 targets in a game to win, well, that's fine. You do what you have to do to win, but that's a bad sign, okay? You want Brandon Marshall to be able to make plays. You want Sterling Shepard to be able to make plays. You want Ingram to be able to make plays. If Beckham's got to get 18 targets on Sunday, then that means the other guys aren't making plays that they're supposed to be able to make. Because that's why they're here. The Giants think they have built a tremendous arsenal of weapons. And if you got to force feed Beckham, that means the other guys aren't getting it done. That's a bad sign.
And you also want to get the running game going, too. So if you keep feeding Odell Beckham, you know, that means that probably you're not effective in other areas. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
Anyway.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Robin is in Atlanta. Robin, what's happening?
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing?
Good morning to you, Robin. Doing well. What do you got for us?
I just wanted to see the young man that had cancer. I think he passed away. Did you guys?
Yes, Weston Richburg did mention that yesterday when he briefly spoke to a few media reporters. Correct. That was the one that Odell Beckham went out to visit that we were talking about on this program.
J-Ron, yeah, condolences to his family and friends for sure.
Okay. I also want to recognize Odell for taking time out and going to visit the young man. That was very good of him to do that.
I didn't see Odell yesterday personally to have a chance to talk to him, but I understand he was very upset about it. Took it to heart because he, you know, it was a big, big thing for this child to be able to meet Odell. And actually, I understand he had an uptick for a couple of days just because he met Odell. He suddenly started to do a little bit better.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't say enough about the impact that these players can have on the young folks, especially those who are desperately in need of a boost.
Yeah, when Weston Richburg spoke to the media, I believe it was Thursday when they reported for camp, he had mentioned that it took a turn for the worst at that point. But that was obviously after Odell and Weston went out to visit him.
Okay. So
thank you for bringing that up.
I just want to recognize him for doing that. That's Well, that's very good of him to do that. Also,
sure.
About the last caller talking about the getting Odell, you know, the ball a little bit more. I think, like you guys said, is what they're doing now is pretty good because you don't want to actually force the ball in there and then, you know, Eli's number, the interception, think how much he had, about 18 or something last season?
16, was it?
I think he had, a few less than that.
Less than that, okay. Yeah, so you don't want him to kind of force the ball in there too anyway because most of the time he's getting double coverage anyway.
Well, and that's another reason why. If two guys are going to go over to Odell Beckham, it makes much more sense to take advantage of your other one-on-one matchups, especially when you have a guy like Brandon Marshall who you just brought in.
Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, I think this season, I think it's going to be a great season. I can't wait till the season starts.
All right,
so
Robin.
Hopefully, we'll do pretty good this season.
Appreciate
the
phone call.
For taking my call.
Thanks so much for weighing in. 16 interceptions for Eli Manning last season.
And then one in the postseason game against the Pack.
So that's the total. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Ed in Maryland. Ed, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Doing well.
I wanted to talk about, from the previous caller's comment about Beckham getting the ball more. I was talking about it earlier in the offseason, and even just going back to last year, when Beckham was on punt returns, he was electric. He's almost like a Deshaun Jackson. When he gets the ball in his hands, I think – as far as the caller was about if we wanted to get the ball more in Beckham's hands, I think he's an absolute game changer as far as the punt returns. I know some people, you know, are kind of worried about him getting hurt, but I think as far as the kickoff return, you have more guys coming down at you as opposed to punt returns. And I'm not sure if they're working on that at training camp, but what do you guys think about that first?
He does field punts in the rotation during training camp. I am of the opinion that if you need him in a big spot on a punt return, put him back there. The Giants did that last season. I understand it. I'm okay with that. If they really need that spark, give him a chance to do something. You are right. He is electric on punt returns. However, I am one who's a bit queasy about putting him back there on a regular basis, especially if Dwayne Harris is healthy, because we've seen Dwayne Harris do some outstanding things on kick returns 2 years ago. Not so much last year, but 2 years ago, he may have had one of the greatest punt and kickoff return seasons in Giants history by taking a touchdown back on both. So,
yeah, Dwayne Harris, he's good, but he's nowhere near Beckham as far as what the
I get it.
In the
I get
his
it.
Hand. He's a threat to take it back. And I think, you know, if we're talking about trying to go to Super Bowl, having that element back on his team, I think, would just make it that much more dangerous. And Pumpkin, like I said, is safer. If he wanted to go down or run out of bounds, he has the option to do that as opposed to kickoff. So I don't think the danger in that is as strong as
well,
most people.
Let me ask
think.
You this. We're talking about Beckham's touches and how many passes are going to be thrown at him. If I said to you now, you're going to add an extra 8 or 9 punt returns to his duties on Sunday. Well, not only does that mean extra hits and extra running he's got to do, and maybe because he's busy doing that, he's a little bit worn down and a little more tired, or maybe not quite up to par with his receiving duties. Remember, the Giants, when they put Dwayne Harris into the offense as a receiver, some of his overall quality of play suffered because he was doing double duty, and it turned out to be a bit too much for him because he was getting the living daylights beat out of him, you know, by playing both positions. Do you really want to do that with Beckham?
And Ed, listen, we're going to let you go because we're getting some feedback on the phone line. Appreciate the phone call. I think that's a fair point, and I think that's something that should always be questioned. I'm of the mindset you put your best players on the field and you don't worry about the injuries or anything else, mainly because you get hurt on any single play in the National Football
League. Well, that's
League.
The Deion Sanders philosophy. Yeah. When he was back there, he was absolutely spectacular.
And Antonio Brown is the main punt returner for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. So I never hear Mike Tomlin being questioned every single week, or I wonder if he's having meetings every week contemplating whether or not to remove Antonio Brown off of punt returns, given that he's one of the most dynamic players in the NFL. Now, I'm not saying that they should do that here with the Giants, because as you mentioned, you have Dwayne Harris, and Dwayne Harris has a strong track record. If you don't have other options, it's understandable that maybe you think about putting your top wide receiver. I don't think there's anything wrong if they decided they wanted to pick their points throughout the season and throw him out there. However, with that being said, you know, returning the ball twice for touchdowns against the Cleveland Browns special teams is not necessarily the sole reason why you should put Odell Beckham out there. If you remember those two touchdowns that were canceled out because of penalties, not to say that Beckham can't do that against much stronger special teams units, but the point is, I think sometimes fans see him really dazzle against weaker teams. You also need to put things in perspective. You're not going to get those types of returns against really strong special teams units every single game.
Yeah.
Let's head back to the phone lines here as we move along on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hey, fellas.
How are you?
Hi.
This morning, I was on the fan. There was a guy that was knocking Odell, you know, all this stuff that's going around. And I started mentioning, you know, him reaching out, you know, going down in Texas there and seeing that young man. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't even know until afterwards, and I turned on, you know, I went to Giants.com, and I saw that he passed, and a tear came to my eye, you know. It really, really broke my heart, you know, and I just started, you know, I was sticking up for Odell because, you know, about him being the highest paid player, this, that, and the other, and we were talking about it the other day, Paul, and you hit the nail on the head. Driven is the word, and I love that, because he is driven, and this will drive him even more, probably, you know. And we were talking about how hard Jerry Rice works. Maybe I didn't, whenever you were on with Feagles, maybe I wasn't saying it right, but Odell, he works, if not harder, you know, are just as hard as anybody. And I recognize that. That's what I was trying to get out, and maybe I didn't say it right. And Jerry Rice was one of those guys, and like Deion said, he didn't enjoy the ride. Well, I think Odell works just as hard, but he wants to enjoy the ride a little bit, you know? And also this morning, you know, the guy was talking on the fan about, you know, him being paid so high. These guys, you know, you look at other sports, you look at baseball, you look at basketball, these guys get paid ridiculous money. So all the power to you, Odell. Go out there, improve yourself, work as hard as you possibly can. You know, be the best player in football history. You know what I mean? That's what I hope he's driven to do. And but that being said, you know what I mean? He puts in the time, and I don't think people see that. They just read in the social media and all this stuff, you know. He's an emotional guy, and, you know, they didn't have this stuff 20 years ago, you know, social media and all that stuff, you know. So who knows what would have been said. But
Nick, I only have one thing to respond here, and that is when you take a look at some of the distractions and some of the extracurricular stuff that's happened with Odell over the early part of his career, if he was not an absolute beast and a workhorse behind the scenes, then his teammates would not look at him with the respect and the admiration that they do. You have to be. You absolutely have to be a workaholic and a pro's pro in terms of your craft if you are going to gain the respect of your peers, especially if you've had some of the social media and other stuff that tends to be a little bit of a slip-up. So that in itself should tell you how much they feel about his preparation.
Yeah, you could put your foot in your mouth if you don't, you know, if you don't put it on the field. You could talk all you want. You don't back it up.
Yeah, you got to back it up.
You got to back it up.
That's it.
But, you know, I've never seen somebody, like you're talking about him with the, you know, punts and all that stuff. It scares me a little bit. But you know what? You guys just said it. Antonio Brown, other players, you know, we're not talking about that. These guys do it every week. When Odell has the ball in his hand,
it's pretty wild.
He's the most dynamic player I've ever seen. He's the most dynamic player I've ever seen so far. You know what I mean? In his, you know, few years that he's been in the league. He's something else. And him getting the ball as much as last year, Eli was looking for that. He was waiting for that big play where Odell's one-on-one and bang, he knows that he's going to go far. You know what I mean?
Nick, you've been a Giants
this
fan
year,
for a long time,
not
right?
Happen. He's got too many weapons. McAdoo is going to be like a mad scientist back there just saying, I got all these weapons. He's going to make some plays happen. You
Nick,
know what I mean?
Nick,
there's going to be some plays that you see that I'm pretty sure all of us are going to be amazed by this.
Nick,
year,
you've been
you know
a Giants fan for a long time, right?
Yeah, a long time.
All right, all right.
And you know what? I went to practice yesterday. Another thing, Paul. Eli Apple up against against Beckham, he looks great.
He looks terrific.
You know, I love that, seeing him up against Beckham, and I love seeing Jack Rabbit up against Brandon Marshall because you know what? In the season, that's what you're probably going to see. You're going to see, just like last year, you're going to see Jack Rabbit up against their number one, and he could be a guy that's as big as Brandon Marshall or he could be a guy that's the size of Beckham. And I think them every day seeing what I saw yesterday in practice, they're just going to get so much better that secondary. I mean, it's going to be scary.
All right, look,
you know?
Nick, we got to go. But before you do, I just want to throw a couple names at you. When you talk about electric with the ball and the ability to reach the end zone from anywhere on the field, very few guys in my 35 years of covering this team could do that. Beckham is one of them. David Meggett is another one.
Dave Meggett.
I believe Tiki Barber was one of those guys. And I believe on kick returns, Ron Dixon was actually one of those guys, too, for a very short period of time. But other than that, you might have to go back to Homer Jones. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And Deion, too. Deion, whenever he got the ball in his hands, he did.
Well, he wasn't.
Well, that's going
Giants.
Outside of the Giants. I mean,
just talking
in NFL
Giants.
History, there's tons
okay,
of guys.
Okay, just
yeah,
Giants.
I mean, what about
history.
Barry
okay,
Sanders?
You,
he's another
you.
Guy, too.
Hey,
thank you, Nick.
Thing,
Nick, do we got to run? We got to run.
Yeah, we got to wrap up here, Nick. Appreciate the phone call. We'll speak to you in the coming days. But there's plenty of guys in NFL history. That's certainly you feed them the ball, they could do plenty of dangers. Well, that's going to wrap up the program for today. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. We will try to address those tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running again tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll recap the previous day's affairs and look ahead to the upcoming practice. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a good one.